Hello and welcome to The Sound of Economics from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I am Maria Demeritis, the Deputy Director of Bruegel, and today I am presenting the latest episode of the Director's Cut series focuses on trade relations. Joining me today is Professor André Sapir, who is a senior fellow here at Bruegel. André, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
And I'm here to have a conversation about the latest on a theme that we have touched on before, which is the relationship between the US and the EU as it concerns trade. So, André, the latest in this theme is news that came to us on Monday when the European Commission received a mandate to, should I say, resume talks on trade bilaterally with the US. So am I right in saying that there are actually, when it comes to the bilateral relationship between the two, there are actually conflicting messages here? We get a mandate on Monday to resume talks, but at the same time, the threat of tariffs looming from the US on European products, primarily cars, is still a very, very, very alive. So what do we make of this?
I think you are right that there is ice and fire here, and there is also a relationship between the two, I believe. Now, let's step back a little bit in time, and let's recall that during the Obama administration, and for several years and for several rounds, there was a EU-US trade discussion, negotiation, that was called TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And this was not an easy negotiation because those are two big partners, each of them with their own interest and their own visions about certain elements. But nonetheless, it was making progress. Then came the election of Mr. Trump, and he announced that on day one of him assuming office, he would cancel the TTIP negotiation. And that's indeed what happened. So the negotiations were stopped, and people in Brussels were a little puzzled because there had been quite a bit of progress, and the US, after all, is a very important trade partner for the EU, and the EU is also an important trading partner for the US. So people were a little puzzled, although they'd been warned, obviously, of the intention of Mr. Trump. And the view in Brussels was this is being put in the fridge. It may sort of come back. Perhaps after a while, Mr. Trump would warm up to the relationship and relaunch the negotiation. And on the contrary, what we saw after a few months is that not only we did not resume the negotiation, but Mr. Trump announced that he would put tariffs on steel imports from all of its partners, including from the EU. And then really the EU was extremely puzzled. Not only we had stopped the negotiations, no, we were more in an adversarial relationship, the US taking measures indeed against such a strong ally as the EU. Yeah. And I think everyone in Europe was quite a bit unsettled, you know, what to make out of this. And so, as you know, there were a number of sort of back and forth negotiation with the US concerning now only the steel issue, not about the big picture, but simply the steel. Was yes or no, the US going to impose steel measures on the EU? The EU arguing that, you know, we are strong allies and there would be no reason to impose this. And at the end of the day, Mr. Trump did impose the measure on steel. And we could see really the relationship souring. Then during the summer of last year, 2018, there was this famous trip of President Juncker to Washington, to the White House, and trying to, you know, mend the relationship. And I think the expectation on the EU side was not that high, because again, they did not know how to handle this this new US president. But in the end, maybe against hope, there was a declaration, a one-page declaration. That was a truce declaration, and that was viewed as a victory on the European side, that there was this discussion at the end of one day, this famous Rose Garden kind of speech in the White House, and, you know, with big smiles and a piece of paper indicating, yes, that, you know, although the US was maintaining its trade measures on steel, it was not intending to apply new measures, and that, yes, indeed, the EU and the US should seek to relaunch trade negotiations. Not TTIP, because, you know, for Mr. Trump, the fact that TTIP was the Obama administration was probably a killer in itself. But yes, Mr. Trump was willing to explore a new trade negotiation, a new trade agreement with the EU. And since the summer of 2018, EU and US officials have been trying to come up with the contours of a new mandate for the US and for the EU to launch new negotiations. And what happened indeed this Monday is that, based on the mandate that the Commission has been seeking for several months, the Council, so the ministers of trade that have to give the mandate, did agree to a negotiation mandate between the EU and the US.
But at the same time, what happens is the summer, at the same time, is that the US administration has actually threatened to impose further tariffs, apart from the aluminium and steel, also on European cars, and not just European cars, but basically on cars, which is going to be quite pivotal for the ability of the European economy to recover and continue to grow. So we are continuing to get conflicting messages from the EU administration. On the one hand, negotiate, resume or restart, whichever way we want to think about it, the trade negotiations. On the other hand, the threat of looming tariffs is still very much there.
I fully agree. And I think that's what makes this negotiation a bit complicated. On the one hand, there is a feeling in Europe, I think a justified feeling, that we are starting negotiation with a gun against our head, that President Trump not only has already put measures against steel import from the EU, but is threatening to put further measures, including on cars, and has not committed to put a hold on those measures during the negotiation. It's not like, you know, during the Olympic Games of the old days, where during the Olympic Games there was peace. Right? Countries that or cities that were participating.
The very old days, you mean?
In the very, very old days of Athens and the Greek cities, you know, this was a time of truce. Here, there's not been a commitment on the part of President Trump. Let's launch negotiation, and during at least the negotiation, there would be peace, and then we will see later. Now, he's continuing, in a sense, to put pressure on the EU. If I don't get certain things out of those negotiations, I could be imposing new measures. And that certainly is leaving a sour taste in the mouth of many Europeans who have been actually hesitating whether or not to launch the negotiation. That's why I think on the European side, it took quite a while to agree on this. You know, should we or should we not launch negotiation with a country that continues to apply measures and continues to threaten us of new measures? On the other hand, the view that has dominated is that it's still better to launch negotiation in the hope that indeed that would refrain, even though there is no commitment on the part of Mr. Trump, but maybe nonetheless it would refrain is harder in imposing measures. And so this is the place where we are. Mr. Trump is continuing to have tough words against Europe and saying that Europe is behaving in a very unfairly manner in a number of domains, including automobile, and at the same time is agreeing to launch the negotiation. And this is a very, very strange climate to do negotiation. And I would say that at this stage, really nobody knows where those negotiations are headed.
So if I just go back then and see things a little bit from the EU perspective, a very adversarial position from Mr. Trump, quite clearly bit of all of this that we see is negotiation strategy or tactics. The EU has been very consistent in saying we need to talk, we need to continue to talk. So that fits very much in that philosophy. But we also need to be ready to counterattack, if I may use that word, if we were to see measures coming from the US that are against free trade in the form of tariffs. So am I right in thinking that this is very much consistent with the strategy that the EU has maintained vis-a-vis the new US administration when it comes to trade issues? Am I right in thinking that, or you think there is a slight change here of approach? Is there something new that we need to be aware of?
No, I think this is exactly it. We are not happy with the measures. We are fearing new measures. We are standing ready to take countermeasures, but all the time we are telling the United States, look, this is not what we wish. What we wish is indeed to be able to conclude a deal to lower tariff barriers on each other's trade and to resume a peaceful relationship. And so I think the launch of the negotiation was indeed an important element in the EU strategy to demonstrate to the US that, at least as far as we are concerned, we are not in an adversarial situation, but that if you, the United States, do adopt measures against us, we will not stand by and we will reciprocate.
So let's talk a little bit about the trade deal itself. I mean, but what I mean by that is the makings of the trade deal. One of the most important characteristics, ingredients that any trade deal that the EU has said is going to do will need to have accordance with the Paris Agreement. So the EU has been very strong on this. And we also know that the US is not subscribing to this idea. So how important do you think this issue of the Paris Agreement on the environmental issues is going to be in terms of getting that off the beyond the finish line?
So I think this is indeed an important point. There's been a lot of pronouncement on the part of the EU that we are not willing to do trade deals with countries that are not signatories to the Paris Agreement on climate. There's been a lot of pronouncement, although there's never been really a commitment on the part of the EU that this is our position. There are pronouncements. It was never said, there's never been a council, a formal council decision that, you know, countries that are not part of the Paris Agreement would not be able to have a deal with the EU. There's been political declaration, but not sort of a firm commitment. Now, the test of this came in a sense this week, because the country that has championed the Paris Agreement, perhaps in part because it is the Paris Agreement, is the country where the agreement was signed, France. And as you know, France is the only country that this Monday, when the Council met and was to give or not the mandate to the Commission, what the Commission was seeking, France voted against it. Belgium voted not against, abstained. So all the other countries voted in favor, and you do not need unanimity for this. All you need is a majority of the member states, a weighted majority of the member states. So it has gone through despite the opposition of France. And France indeed justified its opposition to the launch of the negotiation with the Paris Agreement, said that, no, the US has pulled out of the Paris Agreement. Therefore, we should not be launching negotiation with this country, with the United States. Other countries that are also nonetheless committed to the Paris Agreement have taken a more relaxed view and said that there's no reason not to launch negotiations with the United States, despite the fact that it has pulled out of the Paris Agreement, but that we shall have to evaluate at the end of the negotiation whether yes or no to sign the deal, if the US at that time were to be still outside of the Paris Agreement. So I think the real issue about whether or not the EU is serious in linking trade deals with the Paris Agreement is yet to come.
I see. Yeah. And what's your sense on that point? Do you think if we were to go that far, which of course at this point is pure speculation, would a trade deal with the US pass if the US is not signing the Paris Agreement?
Look, I think there is one way to interpret what is going on, which would be my view, which is certainly a view that Mr. Trump would not like, and maybe the EU would not like to hear either, but which I think is the most reasonable interpretation of what is going on, is that the EU is trying to buy time. The EU is probably hoping that Mr. Trump would not be re-elected. And so, you know, let's talk with the US, let's keep the channels open. And I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Rather than simply be in this adversarial position, which we are, right? Because of Mr. Trump's own decision. You know, the view of the EU, okay, there is the adversarial part, but there should be also a positive part on the agenda, and this is the negotiation. But the EU obviously understands, as Mr. Trump does, that maybe we would not be able to sign the deal at the end. There we would be, I think, be in a difficult position, because then the member states would be much more divided than they were this Monday, where only France voted against and Belgium abstained. There may be other countries that are taking seriously the link between the trade deal and the Paris Agreement. So, and that day, you know, whether it will be in a year or 2 years' time, we shall see. But I think the hope on the EU's part is that let's talk. Doesn't cost anything to talk. At least it keeps, as I said, the channels open between the two sides. And maybe Mr. Trump will not have a second mandate, and we will be able to go back to the pre-Trump relationship between the EU and the US. And that problem, you know, the US would again be a signatory to the Paris Agreement. And in a sense, the dilemma for us will go away. Whether this is a wise game that we are playing or not, we shall see. And obviously, I'm sure that Mr. Trump understands that, and Mr. Trump is going to put pressure on the EU to try to make progress during certainly his first term. So I think it was a good idea to launch a negotiation, but we may not be off the hook quite fully yet.
So you're saying this game of warm and cold will continue for some time, and just for the moment it's warm again, and we'll see where this takes us. This is all very clear. I wanted to just perhaps one last question for you, André. The, if I may say, contamination of the bilateral relationship between the US and the EU when it comes to issues of trade is not just about the relationship between the two. It's broadly for the global multilateral system and about global trade in particular. The imposition of tariffs from the US, the need for the EU to counterattack, has also harmed others, because both had to impose tariffs on others as a result of this relationship not working the way that it perhaps ought to work. So there is a sense in which as long as the US and the EU don't work properly together in terms of promoting global growth, the world will not be able to work properly to promote global growth. So in that respect, how do you see the global bilateral system evolving? We have other new players coming into the game, China in particular, but others, big countries that have got views about things, maybe more varied views about how to engage in the global system. Where do you see this going in the next 5 years, to the extent that you can say, will we see a global system in reverse, or do you think we'll be able to salvage some of this and promote open and global trade?
This is all very bad news from the viewpoint of the multilateral trading system. I think there is no doubt that all the actions that President Trump has put in motion since is assuming office have been inimical to the multilateral rules-based system. His view is clearly to have bilateral relations with countries and relations that are not based on a positive-sum game kind of view of the world, but a zero-sum game, a power-based relationship, not the view of trade economists that, you know, all gain from participation in trade, but something very, very different. So in that sense, the multilateral system, with each of those actions that President Trump has adopted, whether it is with the EU, whether it's with other countries, whether it's with China, all of those, and the negotiation that each time he's pursuing. So his first is banging on the head his adversary with tough measures, and says, let's sit at the table, on the bilateral table, and see whether we can make a deal. But from a position of strength, in a sense, from the US. This is clearly his way of proceeding, which is totally different from sitting in Geneva and behaving in a gentleman's fashion, talking about rules and multilateralism and values and positive sum gain and all of those kind of things. He's adopting a totally, totally different stance. And that coming from the country, the United States, which was essentially the founding father of the system as a whole. So it's not just the EU that, as I said before, that has been unsettled by Mr. Trump's action against us. The EU is the whole world, which is unsettled by the president of the United States taking such a stand, which we have not seen since, before World War II. So where we are headed, it's difficult to say. But as I said, this is a series of bad news. Whether at some stage the system can be salvaged, and what is the role also of the EU into this? Because we should not forget that the EU is an important trading partner. It's as large, if not largest to some extent, than the United States in the world trading system. And then there is indeed China, which is the other big elephant in this game. So how those three players are relating to one another, both in their bilateral relationship, EU with the US, EU with China, US with China, US with the EU, and then how those countries behave vis-a-vis all the other members of the WTO, the Indias, the Brazil, the African countries, the Singapore, the Switzerland, all of those other players that are, in a sense, at the moment watching the game between the three big elephants. And we are hoping, I think, that the system, because the system is much more important in a sense for smaller countries. The system is a system where precisely relationships are not power-based relationships. So for small countries to have the protection of rules, multilateral rules, is very, very important. So I think they are watching what those actors are doing. And I think there is a lot of hope, in a sense, and the EU knows it, that the onus is on it to be sort of to take over from the US the baton of multilateral rules-based system. But the EU is in this uncomfortable position because of the pressure from the US that is indeed having ripple effect throughout the system. So I think the EU has both, in a sense, an opportunity to assume leadership at the global level, but at the same time, it is weak because it is under threat from the US. And obviously, our relationship with the US is not just a trade relationship. We have also a security relationship, which is there very unbalanced. The trade relationship is much less unbalanced between us and the US. After all, there's a lot of trade between EU and the US in both directions. There's a lot of foreign direct investment. Lots of US foreign direct investment in the EU. Lots of EU foreign direct investment in the US. So our economic relationship is very strong. It's, I would say, broadly balanced. The security one is very dependent. There we are really dependent on the US. And certainly that is also one of the pressure points that President Trump is putting on the EU to say, not only you guys are exporting too many cars to us, but you're also not paying your fair share into the NATO budget. So the EU, I think, is in a complicated position, but I do believe, and very clearly so, that there is a demand on the part of the other trading partners for the EU to assume leadership in order for the multilateral trading system to survive this onslaught from President Trump.
This is a very good step in the right direction in terms of resuming talks, try and stabilize, normalize the relationship with the US, not only for the sake of the relationship between the EU and the US, but also for the sake of the global system, which will protect small and big alike. That brings us to the end of this episode. Ante, thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you all for listening to this director's cut of The Sound of Economics. If you're interested in more of Bruegel's work, we have an array of blog posts and publications available at our website, www.bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again until next time. Andrea, thank you again and goodbye.